10 o'clock on a Friday morning. And time now to introduce you to my special guest on the Dave Charles Show on this Friday edition. His name is Sibusiso Nkoloti. How about that for a marvelous, beautiful musical introduction? Sibusiso Nkoloti.
Oh, my word. Lovely name. Solid as a rock, eh?
Solid as a rock, and it's Spoo and the Lifestyle Center is synonymous with good coffee. If you've been to the Lifestyle Center in Balito and you have been to the Studios Precinct, you will have come across Coffee Lab. And there is where Spoo and his team make magic. And he's also got an interesting philosophy on life and love and no doubt all sorts of other things as well. But I thought it would be a great opportunity for us to get together with Spoo and have a little natter. So welcome to the studio, mate.
Thank you. Thank you, Charles.
Lovely to have you aboard the morning show or the Dave Charles Show. Let's find out a little bit more about you, because everyone's got a story, and I'm sure yours is fascinating. Where did you grow up?
Okay, Charles, I grew up like in Vic Falls. That's in Zim. One of the most greatest places that you can ever be in. You know, it's a humble space, like humble environment with such amazing people. But sometimes I feel like I've never grown up like in one space. I've been in different places, like in Zambia, a bit of Botswana.
But you grew up in Zimbabwe?
Yes.
Was this at a time when there was change, political change in the country?
Yeah, we went through all that. You know, remember that time I was just coming out of school. You know, and we enjoyed like such a... It was quite interesting to go through that, like, you know, where we grew up, like, walking to the shop and buying bread and, you know, like, milk. Everything was fantastic, you know, as kids. And then one day we wake up, like, there's nothing in the shops. So every day we had to wake up, like, around 2 a.m. to go and queue for bread. You know, our economy just, like, went crashing, like, down, like, completely.
And I believe the price of a loaf of bread became staggering as well.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
So... clearly, things, well, change is often uncomfortable, and for you it certainly was a catalyst to get going. What did you want to do when you were at school? What was your idea of how you were going to make a living?
You know, to be quite honest, like, I hated school. I was a troublesome at school. I never thought about my future when I was at school. you know, all I wanted to do was just play football and be like a sport kid, like run and just like kick a ball and just be around people, you know. I used to do like a lot of exercises like gymming and yeah, just be somebody that who made lots of problems like on the street.
So you obviously you were popular with the girls and made your mark there, no doubt, I'm sure.
Not quite. I wasn't quite involved like too much like with girls. I had like a relationship like at school, like, you know, that I was one of those guys that will you go like long term. So, but because we were involved like into like sports, so, you know, everybody knows you, and it was just like a good feeling at that time. Yeah.
And then came the troubles. Mm-hmm. And had you finished school when the troubles reached their zenith and the prices of bread and all sorts of other commodities went crazy and you had nothing on the shelves?
Yes. During that time, I think that's when I think it was 2006, because it hit us like hardly 2007. And 2006, I finished my O level, and straight away I went to be a caddy, as a, you know, carrying all golf apex for golfers, like in the golf course. So, and that was a fantastic environment to be and very interesting times as well.
Particularly seeing that the country's economy was going in a strange direction, a difficult direction for most, and yet golf carried on.
Yeah, it carried on, you know. It carried on. People, like, life carried on, you know, like, as if, like, nothing was happening. You know, I think that was one of the most special times, because people, they quickly shifted mentality, and everybody had to adapt very quickly. So instead of, like, thinking of a job, you had to be, like, an instant entrepreneur, think of something to do instantly, you know, because there was no income for many people. Even if you had income, there was nothing to buy. There was no middleman in the shop. There was no operator in the shops. You know, most shops were completely empty and people lost jobs because of that. You know, so we were forced mostly to go outside into the closest countries like Zambia, Botswana, mostly to go and buy our basic commodities so that we can survive.
And were you part of that?
Yeah, for sure.
Migration?
Yeah, for sure.
Where did you go to first?
I went to Zambia. Yeah, Zambia, because in Vic Falls, like you didn't need a passport to go to Zambia. You only had to have a border pass. So that was going to be used like for one day. So
it was like a shopping expedition. Yeah. You weren't there to work or find your entrepreneurial...
No, for sure. For sure. Remember, during that time, like there was no money. So you had to go there with a trade. So in rural areas where I come from, like people used to create like curios, you know, like statues and all that kind of stuff. So we had to carry out to go and trade for millimen. So if you didn't have anything, you had to find something to go like and trade for, or you go and work in the farms, like Botswana. Like many people used to go and work in farms. And
what did you do?
I did a lot of things.
Like
fertilizer, like we used to carry fertilizer and cross it over. Curio shops, and you used to carry all those statues and go and do a trade. And
where did the curios or the artworks come from?
Come from the communities. Like, I mean, people in the communities, they used to do that. So they'll give you to go and trade and bring them something and something for yourself as well.
So you were like an agent.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And knowing you, you would have been very good at that.
Absolutely.
Which is because you find that charm has got you a long way.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
How long were you trading in Zambia?
Not for too long. You know, the funny thing is that, like, during that time, I found something that was quite interesting. So I started bringing in beers in Zim, where I used to sell to the people, you know, and petrol that was coming from Botswana. Than we used to sell for people with cars.
So it was black market trade.
Yes.
Where did you get the beer from?
From Zambia and Botswana.
Okay, so you were doing a dual or two-way.
Yes.
You were taking Zimbabwean curios to Zambia and Botswana and then bringing back their petrol and beer.
Yes.
And selling it at a markup to...
Yes, to the locals.
To your cousins and brothers and sisters and friends.
And friends.
And no doubt in that way making a living.
Yes.
But it couldn't have been easy.
No, it was never easy. Life has never been easy. You know, but I mean, that's when you have to make like creative choices where you instantly have to think about something that like can benefit without like causing any problems. Because during that time... What I realized that like if you make a mistake and cause problems, that means you won't have anything to do tomorrow because you have distracted like the law, you've distracted anything further. So that's when I started learning to be disciplined about the thing that I was doing. So I had to pull myself together and start like, you know, was a difficult thing to do. But yeah.
What was the biggest lesson you learned during that time?
Respect people. You know, with people from Botswana, different languages, Zambians, different languages, and also like there was a bit of like Namibia, the different cultures there. And if you wanted to get along with people that side, like respect is one of like the biggest values you have to carry. So that really, really humbled me. And that was the biggest lesson that I've learned, that if you respect people, you have a way in communication with people. You have a way, like at the table with people. You have a way, like in people, in relationships, you know. So that was the biggest lesson.
And how long before you made your way south to South Africa?
So 2006, that was between that and 2007. I actually enrolled like into a hotel as well as a barman. And the waiter as well, like for part times.
In South Africa?
No, in
Zimbabwe.
Yeah, in one of the hotels called like Zambezi River Lodge. It was one of the beautiful hotels. And I learned a lot. That's where the service came in, of like dealing with people and food and, you know, alcohol. And, you know, that's where I learned to drink lots of alcohol.
Okay. Well.
But during that time, right now...
So you were then clearly working shifts as a barman or a waiter, depending on the time of...
when they brought me in, yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you had then skills to bring to South Africa.
Absolutely.
So how did that process come about?
You know, when I was in the hotel, I met a guy. His name was James White. He was from America. I never planned to come and stay in South Africa. My route was on my way to America, actually. So, but because of the buzz of World Cup, so I wanted to start here, like, and just like, you know, where can I accumulate some money and do that and just like move to America. But, you know, you can always plan. But when God has a plan for you, that everything shifts.
Ah, so I take it you're a man of faith.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a good point to pause, play a little music, and we'll come back and pick up the story on the flip side. Yes, this morning, Spoon Kolodi from Coffee Lab. And I've got to say, thank you for the coffee, Spoon. A quick commercial break here, you see. We groove on the coffee.
I groove on the coffee, yeah.
So you, now having learnt respect, trade values, if you like, how to get on with people in difficult circumstances, having now shifted to the hospitality trade, become a barman, a waiter, and met someone from America who was going to hopefully help you to emigrate or to find a way across to the United States.
Yes.
That didn't happen. What happened instead?
So, you know, during that time, there were other two guys that I had met, the two Indian guys that were... came to the hotel, and obviously we stayed in communication. And yeah, you know, like, and I said to them, I want to come for World Cup, and I just want to come and find some job. They're like, no, come through. We will help you, you know, get along and all that. Then I traveled, and I came through, and I came to Durban, but I have never seen them up until today.
You didn't find them here?
No. That's how I started living on the street.
So you were homeless?
Yes, for a long time.
How was that?
I would say it was humbling. Very humbling, I must say. Yeah. You know, like...
How did you find yourself on the street? How did you find yourself homeless? And more importantly, how did you survive?
You know, like I say, that's when I realized that sometimes... when I realized that afterwards, that I think all that was part of the plan that God has set up for me, you know. And during that time, like, I didn't know what to do. Like, there was nothing that I could do or say, because I didn't know anybody. So there was nowhere to go. So the best place to be was to be on the street. And that's, you know, from Durban, I started, like, roaming around on the street. And, you know, but that skill of respecting and getting away with people, it really came through for me.
What happens, apparently, to dull the pain or the discomfort or the fear or all that negative stuff? A lot of people, homeless people, take to drugs. And it's a huge problem in Durban, in every major center.
Yeah.
Were you involved?
Not quite. I've never touched a drug in my life. Not even once, not even like the worst circumstances in my life. alcohol, yes, but a drug, any substance that I've never.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I was exposed to it, yes. Like, it was there around me all the time, 24/7.
But you never succumbed to temptation. And you were able to lift yourself out of that homelessness.
Yes.
How did that happen?
So I remember this at the time, and I was just, because I used to walk through that whole a town, and I met this guy. He was a very, like, nice man. He took me and he showed me, like, all of it. And then there's a big church in, I think it's like West Street or Smith, the big church. And he said to me, go there and pray. And say whatever you want to say. And then go and look for a job. And on that day, I remember I said to God, why would you bring me here and just, like, give me this kind of life? You know, all I want is to just work and just earn a living. And the moment I did that and I left, for me, it was just a communication more than being a prayer. And I left and I was walking down facing down to the beach, and I met these guys in the fast food, which was called Ribmate, and they were looking for someone, and I found myself working there.
As what?
Is everything. Like, I was making ribs, I was making chicken, I was cleaning. I just became the main guy there.
So you were a jack of all trades, but yes. Now back in the hospitality industry where yes. You were comfortable, familiar.
Yes.
Just before we leave the street, because I'm curious, where did you sleep at night?
In the corners of everywhere.
Like just on the literally on the pavement.
Yes.
Durban, luckily, is not too cold at night, but I'm sure that you had those days and those nights where it was wet and filthy. And where did you wash?
We never washed at some point, because that's the thing. I never knew the place. I never knew anybody until I started knowing.
So you must have been quite high when you go. I'm talking about the odor must have been quite strong.
Yeah,
to go and work in a fast food joint.
Yeah, no, it was. But you know, at some point as the time went on, like I started like knowing people, obviously from the street, the guys that you see like on the street. But I must say, you know, when you walk around and look at all those guys that are on the street, I have respect, so much respect for them. Some of them, you know, and. People always look at them like as like low, like troublesome people, and like, you know, but we grew up like in different environments of our lives, and sometimes like the mental strength, that's where it comes in. That's why I'm always very grateful for the things that I've went through even before I came here, because it really taught me something to be a hustler. You know,
I was going to say you were quite familiar with the world of hustling. You had to be with your trading, curios, etc.
Yeah.
But did you find also that there was a sense of community even on the street?
Yes,
a sense of sharing.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's something that I think, as Africans, there is a tremendous. I've heard people say that have been. In reduced circumstances, shall we say, and have fallen on hard times, how they have found tremendous humanity in the people around them, particularly black people.
Yeah.
They, you know, this is something that maybe is a subject for another conversation, but but in your case, it was part of the survival mechanism, relying on the kindness of others and helping where you could.
Yeah, but Charles, you know, I'm going to tell you something. The humblest people are the one with nothing. Well, they have nothing to offer except themselves, you know, and I got to learn that. And if you have nothing, you have nothing to offer but yourself. That's where you find the truth, you find the honesty, you find the loyalty, you find the respect, then you find humanity. Mm. That's where like the real life is. So I feel like my life began there, and that's when I started living. And I remember when I like at some point like I wasn't even struggling mentally. I wasn't even struggling like with stress, or like I'd never stressed. I was never stressed during that time, because I had people who were living like a true value of life. And that true value of life really taught me how to become a human. You know, that's where I developed like a strong humanity instinct in me, like very, very strong.
Did you ever resort to theft to stay alive?
No, not quite, but more car parking.
Oh, so that was it. You parked.
Yeah, but I lost a lot of things, like, you know, during that time.
Ah.
Oh, well, for theft, yeah.
Moving ahead now, you've got yourself a gig, a job with the fast food guys on the beachfront.
Yes.
How did you progress from there?
You know, it felt like a miracle. You know, and for some reason, the guy trusted me instantly, and they used to give me the key so that I can open up in the morning. So I started like sleeping in the shop. So by the time they got there by 8, I would have done everything. Like I've cleaned the whole shop, made sure that like the stuff is prepared, everything is clean. You know, by 6:30, like everything will be ready, and you know, customers will come in, and the place started getting busy. Like very, very, very busy. For a long time. You know, the guy started like accumulating and making a bit of money. But obviously, you know, when what comes with money, destruction. So he started getting distracted, you know, because the money was coming in to take some money and use it like in a different way. So there was no putting back to the business.
Okay.
And they started like employing more people as well. So then he lost out on that. So that's when I left. and I went to Galitos, started working for Galitos.
Where was that?
Galitos in Durban? In South Beach, yes.
Okay. And the Portuguese restaurant?
Yes. So I worked at Galitos as a delivery guy. Like during that those days, it was a bicycle. So you used to ride a bicycle, like in, you know, deliver like in complexes and apartments and shops and businesses. Yeah, it was cool. And then I think a month later, they promoted me to be a griller. So I started like grilling some meat, you know, some chicken. But also, I didn't last too long there. So I had started making friends during that time. So I met some of my awesome friends. We had like good experiences of life during that time, you know. And that's when they introduced me to a restaurant called Mama Luciana's. That's where life changed.
Mama Luciana. So yes. You went from the Portuguese restaurant to an Italian restaurant.
Yes.
And what did you do there?
I came in as a runner at first, but I ended up like working as a barman. You know,
back to your roots.
Back to the roots. Like I said, you know, life is blind. You can never think like anything just like falls off somewhere. Like life is already blind.
Okay.
And I think also what I've learned during that all those times that like if the life is blind, you must have a purpose in order for you to live it to the fullest. You know, then that's when you find peace.
Were you ever a victim of xenophobia?
I've never experienced it. You know. Because my purpose is different. So,
but it's a reality.
It is a reality.
And at the moment, it's become a reality again in quite a serious way.
Yeah, but you could understand it because they are saying illegal immigrants. They are not saying like anybody. They are saying illegal immigrants, of which you could understand it from a like economic point of view. And also, like obviously, like if you are not legal, there's no track, so you can do anything, you know. So you've got to understand that, like, where these people are coming from, it could have like a very good purpose as well.
So you understand,
yes,
the rationale behind the movement, the
yes,
Dudula or what operation, whatever yeah, they call it. It's a dangerous precedent, and I understand. Mm. I also understand. Mm. To a degree, mm, the passions that flow. Mm. I'm worried about it, though. I think that there's a huge danger that the thing gets out of hand.
Yeah,
and already has to a large degree. But it's again a story for another day.
Mm.
So here you are now, gainfully employed as a barman at Mama Luciana's.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get from there to running your own business?
So, like I said, you know, being humbled, when the world humbles you, it doesn't humble you from having everything. It humbles you from having nothing, so you can get understand from respect point of view, to values point of view, and to humanity point of view. So like everything that I had lived before started coming in, like people became my biggest part of my life, and with respect that came, then came value. And that's when I started realizing that people want nothing except for value. And value becomes as respect. And respect means to be consistent. And consistency comes with discipline. And those values like I play a big role in a person's growth. But also in that growth, do you have a purpose? Or you just like grow up because you just want to have a financial accumulation or live a best lifestyle and all that. So for me, if you look at that time when I was with Marco Conte, he was the owner, and everybody that I met like, during that time, like from my colleagues to the customers, I created a lot of relationship with people, lots of relationships. Some of them, even today, we still have a good relationship.
And you know? and along the way, and I'm sure that we're going to get to that shortly, the relationship that led to you arriving in Belita.
Mm-hmm.
But let's take a musical interlude again. And we'll be back with Spoo on the flip side.
Mm.
Ooh, of Coffee Lab fame. Interesting tales so far from Zimbabwe and the collapsing economy and struggling to make ends meet, to migration to South Africa, to literally the streets, homeless. And from there, on a journey. And the journey has taken us so far into the world of fast food, into the restaurant industry, and now we're going to find out how you got from your restaurant job to owning your own coffee emporium?
Yeah, Dev, you know, relationships are one of like the most like a significant, because that's called connection. You connect with people. So when I was at Mama Luciana's, I met a guy. His name is Raymond Fredman. He owns Ray's Kitchen. Do you know Ray's Kitchen? Dunkirk?
Yes, yeah.
Ray is a very good friend of mine. Me and Ray, we go a long way back. When we used to work for the Sharks, did weddings together and did all the events. Like, he, the guy who taught me about food. During that time when we were at Mama's, when I met Ray, when he was coming from overseas, he worked there like as a chef for a bit. And then we opened the deli where we used to sell all Italian food. And then we started to use like baking and, you know, selling all those Italian products. And it was just like we're having an amazing time. So during that time, that's when I met two guys, Don Muller and Trevor Scale. They sold me an idea to come and work in a workspace at Mhlanga during that time. I think it was 2012 when I met them. And during that time, and I was just like a guy, you know, just like loved to have people around. I used to have a lot of conversation with a lot of people. But not realize that like those guys were developing an idea for me. So I think we were the first people to open like the first workspace in Durban. It was called The Set. So I resigned from Mama Luciana's. Yeah, Marco did let me go, but I think it was very difficult at that time. But I understood, and off I went, and I went, this was me. I think during that time, that's when my coffee peak happened, when I was at The Set. So what those guys did, it was just like a workspace where people would come and work and get a cup of coffee, but it was part of the package, and get a food. So I was making food and making coffee at the same time, but also managing like the workspace. It was incredible, because the people I met there were the most amazing people. Some of them are still friends even, and some of them are still coming to the shop now, you know. And then from then, the business of workspace wasn't doing so great. In 2015, it closed. And then I moved to private property.
To sell property?
Not quite. I was still an in-house barista then.
Okay.
Yes. But what was the most different thing that I did there, I got involved into a culture team. So we started building culture in that business. So it wasn't just me like making a cup of coffee to people. It was me getting involved like in building the productivity of a team in an environment where there was developers, there was like operations, there was marketing people, there was people used to deal with customers all the time. So we were playing a very big, significant role to build culture there. So that is where I learned so much about culture. And I think if you remember very well, during that time, private property and Property 24 were going like head to head. There was quite like a thing during that time. And from 2016, 17, 18, 19, we did very well because of culture. It wasn't because...
Because of your coffee. Let's be honest. You were the force behind private property.
Yeah.
So how did you get from there to here?
So when I was at The Set, 2014, I started developing like an idea of... it was called like All About Coffee. If you go to our Facebook page, like you scroll down to the beginning, you'll find it. So that's when I started like talking about like coffee and behavior. You know, so I used to post like stuff on Facebook. So I started developing an idea on like how do we find a space into the coffee industry where it's not just about like making a cup of coffee, but like making it more about people and training and the behaviors of baristas so that they can enjoy what they do.
Okay.
You know. When I moved to private property, one of the first things that I did is to ask them, the guys, please, can I run like a mentorship program where I train baristas? But I wanted like people who were not educated, people who had like less opportunities. So that's why my first guy that I came through was TK, you know, the guy at the shop now, Kaya, you know, the short one.
Yes.
Yeah, he was my first one.
Okay, still together.
Yeah, still together. So like, you know, it's very nice sometimes, like people love respect and value. So if you respect them, they stay with you for a long time. So that's what it's all about. That's how I operate.
But how did you get from being an employee? And I understand what you're saying in terms of all of the ideas, etc. But it's an expense to set up a shop, a business like yours. You clearly needed investors.
Yes.
You needed people to believe in you, and you needed premises. Yes. How did that all come about?
So when I got retrenched 2019, like, you know, during COVID times, and one of my friends, her name was Natasha Fraka, or in fact before then, when they were giving us like packages for retrenchment, I asked if they could give me the equipment rather than the money. But they actually gave me both, you know, that was fantastic. So I contacted one of my friends. He used to be work for private party as well as a designer. I said, dude, do you mind if you can help me here? I want to build a logo. I want to start like doing, but during that time when I was doing that, it was for the academy. I wanted to start doing like trainings and all that, and getting the space of events. I never thought about like a coffee shop. I always thought about like an academy to build and train people, and also have like an event company where you just go from event to event. So Natasha posted a cool photo on social media, Facebook specifically, and it just traveled. It went everywhere, all over the country. And everybody contacted me, like more than 1,000 calls I got almost every day. But there was one call that struck me like very hard. JJ, Jen Digby, when she called. And she said to me, I believe you've got your own equipment and we're looking at space to put. I've got a perfect space for you. So like,
now, Jane was the woman that was instrumental in getting the studio gallery up and running.
Yes.
So, okay, it makes sense now. Yes. So she was looking for a little coffee attached to the gallery in the studio at the Lifestyle Center.
Yes, and I remember, and it was only going to be for 6 months, then done.
So it was a pop-up.
It was a pop-up, yeah. So I said, okay, cool. Come, let's do it. Okay, we met, and I think we met like a sense of coffee. And we had a cup and we chatted, and I just love JJ up until today. She's one of the most amazing people, and she played a massive role into getting involved with Coffee Lab too. And then instantly I called one of my friends, the guy that I started private property, his name is Justin Clark and Sue Clark. So they're like my closest people. I said, there's something happening now. I'm getting an opportunity here. And I've got everything from coffee machine to that. I just need stuff for just get a few things. And I don't have money. They're like, oh, okay. And at that time, I think they were in the Midlands. You know, so I think she was playing golf there. And she's like, okay, just wait for me. We're coming back next week. And then they came, and we came, and JJ was showing us the space in there. You know, there was nothing. You know, just like a dust. And she was like, no, your coffee shop will be here. I was very, very confused. And like, how is that going to happen? And I explained to JJ, I don't have money. She said, no, don't worry. I think at that time that she went to speak to Bruce and Mara at that time. And I said, no, it's fine that we're going to build
the
a culture.
The Lifestyle Center.
Yeah, yes. You know, these guys are amazing. Like, I don't know what to say, that you can never thank someone enough. You know, because
the Renkins have done more for Belito than I think most people understand
in terms of the
value of the brand.
Absolutely.
They are quite phenomenal.
No,
they
good
are businessmen, but they are extremely
like they understand
good people. Yeah.
Yeah. When and you know what I liked? and I remember when that was set up and Bruce came through and he looked at it and was like, I think we can do something with this. You know, and I felt it at that time as well, like that, like I belong here. This is our space. But it was very difficult because who's Coffee Lab? Coffee Lab is just like a brand that just like pops out, like, you know, like with a big logo and like some chalks written, like there's a menu there, and there's some two fridges. Like this space was very hot. Nobody was like probably coming in at that time when I was making no money, and there was no income. You know. And there's just like few people were selling coffees very, very, very cheap. So that's when I started standing outside and sometimes calling people inside, give them free coffee, you know. The thing, I don't know if you remember, Brad, he used to work for Spa.
Yes.
His wife, Candice. Yo, that woman, like, she started like telling people about like this.
So and it was a lot of goodwill, yes. Word of mouth,
word
that
of
got
mouth.
People traveling yes. to your particular coffee lab.
Yes.
And there it was, established at the Lifestyle Center, tenuously at first, which is often the case. You know, you've got to start something. You can't always wait for it to be absolutely perfect.
No, absolutely, yeah.
So you started and you perfected it along the way to the point now where you've actually opened a second branch.
Yes.
At Bidvest McCarthy Toyota.
Yes. Yeah.
Strange they are the sponsors of the show. So they know a good thing when they see it.
When they see one, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a very interesting story when you talk about Coffee Lab.
Yeah,
because I've always viewed Coffee Lab as a person.
But you know what? I love this story because it doesn't have a happy ending because we're not at the end yet. We are at the end of this conversation because time is always against us. But I'd like you to come back in and talk about developing, you're developing more than a coffee shop. You're developing a philosophy and a training philosophy,
yes.
and you're giving back to the community, which
absolutely.
Is tremendous.
That's important.
So, yeah. so we will schedule another conversation. Like
absolutely.
This,
yeah.
And I thank you for joining me on the Dave Charles Show.
Thank you.
I've learned a lot about you, and I thought I knew you quite well. It just goes to show.
Yeah,
hey?
But this is what I want to leave you, Charles, with. You know, in the life of today. And I just want to encourage people, you know, like, let's find a purpose. Purpose creates, like, value, you know. And when you have value, then that's where the instinct of humanity kicks in. And if we become more human, we can do a lot. And if we do a lot together, the weight is lighter, then life becomes even more interesting. So, I mean, togetherness is power. Man is not power.
Wise words from my guest, Spoo Nkoloti from Coffee Lab. Thanks again for joining me on the Dave Charles Show. And the music continues.